Today on Vox Talks Economics, when aid donors are distracted, do oppressive regimes take advantage? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Instagram as well. This summer, Vox Talks is bringing you interviews from CPR's Paris Symposium. Conflict is clearly on everyone's mind, and Dominic Rona of the University of Lausanne leads our research policy network on preventing conflict. Now, the researchers for the RPN are creating a huge amount of original and interesting research as well, and Dominic joins me now to talk about the new work he's been presenting at the symposium. Dominic, welcome.
Hello, Tim. Thanks a lot for having me.
You are very welcome, Dominic. Now, in this research, you're testing the idea that a repressive government may time its actions strategically when outsiders are distracted by other events. And they're doing this rather than just focusing exclusively on the strengths or weaknesses of their political opponents. It's a very 21st century concept, if you don't mind me saying. What gave you the idea to research this?
Well, one source of inspiration was to see that during the COVID pandemic, in many autocratic countries around the world, one got the impression that they tightened the crackdown on the opposition. Partly they used anti-COVID measures as a kind of pretext to tighten their grip on power. But on the other hand, also they benefited from the fact that Western public opinion was distracted and focusing on the COVID pandemic back home rather than having a more global view on what's going on with human rights and democracy.
To generalize this, though, what sort of events would we be talking about? I mean, clearly there is large random events like COVID, but they don't happen all the time. Can we extend this to planned events like an election, for example?
So in our new study, basically what we do is that we have data from 1990 to 2018, so pre-COVID. COVID is not in our data set. We may study it at some point, but not for now. You know, the new data always comes with a lag, so we're not quite ready yet to study the area of COVID. And so we focus on African countries from 1990 to 2018. And the events we study are of two types. On the one hand, unanticipated events, such as natural disasters in donor countries. Think of an earthquake in France, for example, or forest fires in California, for example. On the other hand, we also study the impact of anticipated events, such as elections indeed.
Now, there has to be an incentive for these regimes to time these actions against their opponents. What you're talking about here is that they are aid recipients from the donors. Is the volume of aid really that high? And are donors really that responsive to these kind of events to make the approval of donors important?
Aid flows vary over time, but in a given year, official development assistance may be above $150 billion. So a big amount. Many of us think that it should be more, but it's still a big amount in absolute terms. And for quite many recipient countries, foreign aid can be above a quarter of their total budget. So it is not negligible. And we're not only interested in development aid per se, but we also see it as a proxy in general for the strength of links between countries. So, for example, we also study alternatively the extent of military or arms trade links. So the public opinion in, say, France, for example, would matter in Mali beyond pure development aid links, but it's like the general link we are interested in.
And is this public opinion when you're talking about donor attention? Is it what people think because they see these events on the news? Or is it the disapproval of the government when these events are reported to them? Because we could say that the public maybe doesn't understand or doesn't care very much about events that are happening in African countries.
Well, I mean, there are quite some links between countries, you know, links between France and Senegal, for example, would be very strong. And in normal times, there is quite some public attention on what happens in various African countries. So we see this in the data. And think, for example, about the Bring Back Our Girls campaign for Nigeria, which was, you know,
huge.
And so in times where, however, the public opinion in a given donor country is distracted, then indeed we see what what you're saying, that people shift away their attention from Africa and focus on back home. So when, for example, Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron are debating before the second round of the French presidential election, when there was this debate, the French population would very strongly focus on this and not watch anything else.
Clearly, some things in the news are predictable. Something like that, a government would know that their donors would be distracted. Other things, we're saying, are not predictable. But most of these distractions come and go pretty quickly. The news cycle moves quickly these days. Does a typical aid recipient have the sort of logistical or strategic ability to take advantage of a lack of attention if it's so fleeting, if it comes and goes so quickly?
I guess one strength of our study is that we really distinguish between anticipated and unanticipated events.
Right.
And so, for example, for anticipated events like the French elections, the dates are known years in advance, right? And so really everybody knows that these events will take place. So there it's possible to strategically plan. And for example, the opposition could know, oh, there will be French elections. I have to be careful what we're going to do. However, for other events like disasters, they come as a surprise. So they are completely unanticipated usually. What we see in terms of evidence is indeed that populations in recipient countries are rather well informed about major events taking place around the world. For the big anticipated events, they would be able to plan in advance. I mean, if you think of the recent French presidential elections, I don't know what you did on the day of the debate between Macron Le Pen. I mean, we watched every minute of it with the kids in front of the TV, right? So this is kind of news around the world, not just in France.
Yes. Now, this requires quite a lot of data, doesn't it? Quite unusual data as well. If you're going to test this hypothesis, where do you get that data from? How complete is it?
The data on foreign aid comes from OECD statistical offices and the one on disaster from something called MDAT, which is has been put together by academics from Belgium. And this is openly and freely accessible. The maybe surprising bit, though, is the conflict data. We wouldn't expect to have such rich data on conflict events, but there exists. So one source is, for example, called ACLET, and there are various other sources. And these data sets are rather fascinating. Because they draw on a huge number of media sources, NGO reports, etc. And you would know where does the event take place in terms of longitude, latitude, you know the date, you know the actors involved, you know the type of events. And this has led to a huge boom in this literature on empirical studies of civil wars and conflict. And so, yeah, this data is of very high quality.
So, of course, the simplest way to do this would be to do a regression and say when there's events happening here, then how much repression goes on in these countries and seeing if you find a relationship between it. But also the opposition, the people who might be repressed, they also maybe expect this as well. Does this complicate your statistical strategy here?
We actually start the paper from a formal mathematical model.
Yeah.
And so in model, we model the behavior of the government and of the opposition.
Okay.
And we detect two countervailing forces. On the one hand, the government has now freer hands to crack down on the opposition when the world is distracted. However, the opposition is clever. They're not stupid. They know exactly the dangers they face if they go down in the streets.
Yeah.
And so the opposition will typically strategically moderate and lie low in these dangerous moments where the government has free hands. What we find is that these two forces neutralize each other. And actually, the government's repression does not change. It remains the same as before. However, we see a lot of action in the behavior of the opposition.
The results that you find empirically match what you're expecting.
Yeah, so basically the mechanism we focus on is that in a given recipient country, when the government has free hands to repress, it is relatively more costly for the opposition to engage in peaceful or low-scale activities such as demonstration, protests, or riots that do not escalate. In contrast, staying home becomes more attractive. You may want to stay on your couch back home, right? And maybe surprisingly, for extreme types of political action, such as targeted killings of pro-government supporters, we find contrasting results. So there are two cases we have to distinguish. First, when it's possible to fully lie low, when there are quiet times and the opposition has the choice to hide, that's what they do, and nothing happens and all types of political action goes down. However, if we're in times of turmoil, where there has already been agitation starting before some surprising donor inattention occurring, well, then it's too late. A genie is out of the bottle and the opposition cannot control and backtrack any political agitation. So then political action is already going on, and then there's mostly a choice of what kind of political action. And what you see then is, paradoxically, given that now the peaceful actions have become more costly, well, people will shift to more extreme actions, because the extreme actions, like targeted killings, their cost doesn't change. They are costly anyway. If you're caught in normal times or in times of distraction, in both times, you face huge penalties for political assassinations. And it's also the international public opinion will protect peaceful protesters, but it will typically not support political assassinations. So basically, the extreme forms of political violence, for them, the trade-off doesn't change. While kind of the peaceful forms, now they become more costly when the world is distracted. And hence you see this shift, this kind of polarization towards either staying on your sofa or extreme political action. Moderate action would go down in at least some situations when the world is distracted.
That is quite a disturbing conclusion. We cannot stop news events happening. So therefore, is there anything that donors can do, if they are aware of this, to moderate the actions of aid recipients?
I guess on a very general level, I think one key implications of our study is that actually scrutiny and attention from international public opinion does matter.
Yeah.
So it really helps to prevent human rights abuses. And we know that maybe some politicians and some companies may not intrinsically care so much about democratic rule of law and human rights. They may care about being reelected or about money. But if there is pressure from the street, from the international public opinion, that this is on the radar, well, then what happens is that they will comply, politicians and companies, and they will help promote these values and protect human rights, because it's in their interest if the pressure from the public opinion is big enough. So we should all play our role to make sure that we promote democratic values and human rights.
Yes, we should. Thank you very much, Dominic. That's really interesting. Thank you very much for talking to me about it.
Thanks so much, Tim.
The paper's called Hidden Hostility, Donor Attention and Political Violence. And the authors are Sivan Anderson, Patrick Francois, Dominic Rona, and Rogerio Santarossa. Is it publicly available at the moment, Dominic?
Well, we are slow. We haven't fully written up the paper yet, but it will be available shortly.
I think this is one that you probably have to write with a lot of care, don't you? Well, look out for it when it comes out. This has been a Vox Talk recorded live at CEPR Paris Symposium 2022. Every week we bring you the most important latest research, so subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And when you subscribe, you'll find more than 200 episodes. So whatever type of economics you like, there's a Vox Talk waiting for you.